Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the SEC Haters podcast, where we judge not by your class, color, creed, or station in life, but by your conference and your conference alone. Coming with me today are the human bicep, Nigel King, and proof that there is a missing link between gorillas and orangutans, Andrew Rodriguez. How are y'all doing today, guys?
I'm doing well.
I'm good.
All right, so we'll go right into it. Week one had a few surprises, so we'll kick in with the most interesting conference that we saw last week. Also, possibly the worst conference, the Pac-12. To start us off, Stanford had a interesting display against Northwestern. What do you think, guys? What do you think about Stanford's run game and offense overall in that game?
To be honest, it was putrid for a team that has built itself on the power run game over the past, you know, 5+ years. To be able to establish none whatsoever is, you know, not a good outlook for them for the rest of the season.
Yeah, you saw an interesting thing with what they did, too, is they spread the field out a lot more. Old school Stanford would put a fullback and three tight ends and say, we're just going to do whatever we want. And you didn't really see as much of that as you get used to having seen the Stanford teams of the past. Plus, David Shaw came out, which he's always known to do, play very conservatively, but he had a couple of fourth and shorts in plus territory that, you know, maybe if he had gotten them, it would have changed the game a little.
The only thing that was interesting to me, now that you make mention of it, Andrew, I don't think they involved the tight ends as much, which, I mean, usually we put an extra guy on the line to help them really establish the game. I don't even remember them really putting in tight ends that much. I mean, did you see anybody that just stood out to you as a tight end, maybe?
Not really. You know, like, you get used to Stanford putting tight ends in the NFL, and you really didn't see a lot. You know, you've got the big Kajust, but he's almost more of a Jimmy Graham hybrid than a really inline tight end like Stanford usually has.
All right, then. Well, moving on from Stanford, we'll take a look at Oregon. They produced how we expected. They put up around 60 points, but also gave up quite a few yards against Eastern Washington, which was a little unexpected, I would think is fair to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first game of the season, so you're going to be blooding some new guys. And Eastern might be an FCS program, but they're usually one of the top 10, top five FCS programs in the country. You know, they definitely put some guys on, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see, because the Pac-12, outside of really Stanford, has never really been a conference predicated on strong defensive performances.
Just from the game in general, the thing I'm most surprised about is the amount of rushing yards they allowed. Usually with Oregon, you're not surprised by the pass yards. People are going to get behind. They're going to start passing the ball more. So for them to have 400 yards with, I guess, the guy who backing up Vernon Adams this year, if he was still there, I'm not as surprised by it, because that's usually their offense. But to allow, 111 rushing yards, to me, that means that they were able to keep them off balance, surprise them. And, we'll definitely see. Oregon lost more defense than I think people are giving credit for. They were more focused on Mariota's loss. But, we'll see if they're really ready this upcoming week, with Michigan State.
Yeah, I guess I'm just surprised that we're talking about a team that most people are considering to be one of the top four in the country, someone who's going to be in the playoffs, certainly. And I guess the only thing positive you can really say about that is, despite their poor showing on defense, they don't really have to play a lot of teams until the conference championship that are going to challenge them in that same fashion. Anyhow, moving ahead, while we're still on talking about in the division for Oregon, Washington State. Oh my gosh. I would like to say that I was shocked by their performance, but that would be a lie. I guess at this point I just kind of expect those outings from Washington State. What do they need to do, you guys think, to get that program back in order?
I mean, I don't know where to start. I mean, you know, Andrew, you have more history knowledge than I do, but I mean, does Washington State really have the history and the alumni backing to really put up a great team in the Pac-12?
Do you want my suggestion? Because I think a virgin sacrifice would do the job, or maybe a deal with the devil. Either or. I mean,
they had a couple Rose Bowl teams, and then you know 97-98 with Ryan Leaf. You know, obviously they had a great team that played in the Rose Bowl. But honestly, out of all of those Pacific Northwest teams, they've kind of cycled. They'll have really good years and then tank. Oregon wasn't really anything until Phil Knight and the Nike money got involved. Mike Bellotti came in. You know, Washington was good in the early 90s under Don James and then kind of tanked a little while after he retired. You know, so it's kind of that's an interesting place. You know, you're going to have to make a living recruiting the state of California.
Yeah, no, definitely. The bigger states. I mean, for them to have 300 passing yards, to me that sucks in the air raid. That's good, but it's not great, right? Especially because they don't have a run game whatsoever.
No, I mean, and it's an interesting offense. You know, he predicates his a lot on short crossing routes and running routes over the top of them. But, you know, if you don't have guys that make those crossing routes dangerous, then it really doesn't matter where you're throwing the ball.
They've certainly got a lot to work on in that offense, and not to mention the defense, which was putrid as well. But going on, staying in the same state, Washington lost to Boise. Any thoughts on that matter? Honestly, that seemed like the least worrisome loss of all the things I saw this weekend. Any comments on that?
I mean, Boise's a good program. You know, they've seem to have been able to plug and play with Brian Harsin coming in with Chris Peterson leaving. They'll have a tough test with the BYU Cougars this coming week. And, you know, I think Washington's in a bit of a rebuild. I think they lost a lot, especially on defense. They had three defensive guys drafted in the first round last year, I believe. So obviously they're going to be breaking in a lot of new talent there. And I want to say the quarterback's new too, because I think Siler Miles either got suspended or was kicked off the team one.
I mean, I would agree with that. It definitely is. It doesn't worry me that much. You have to go to Blue Turf in Boise State's, arena. And then you also had Chris Peterson coming back, right? So it was very emotional for him, probably, for that team. He recruited a lot of those guys on the opposite side of the field. So, I mean, I'm not as worried. His book maybe wouldn't work on them as well as, you know, work on another team. So, you know, Boise State just using the same MO they've always done. They show up just enough to get the win, and, you know, they're going to surprise some people if you don't take them serious enough.
Now, just on – since Andrew, you know more about that program or the scheme, I suppose, is 30 yards rushing typical in that system? Because
– For – talking about Peterson at Washington?
Yes, sir.
No, they – Peterson ran the ball pretty well at Boise State. Jay Ajayi, and then the guy, you know, when they beat Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl, the one guy had a really good game on the ground. You know, they've just been an interesting offense because they've been really good at getting the guys they need to do what they want to do. And it's kind of been a weird spread two-back mix at times. But, yeah, I mean, they seem to want to run the ball when he was at Boise. Now, I don't know a lot about what, you know, talent or whatever Washington brings to the table. So maybe that's something he doesn't have the hosses he feels like to run the ball, or Boise State just played great defense.
Okay, well, do you think they've got a chance of perhaps duking it out, winning the division? I mean, again, since we're still
the
on
Husky?
The Huskies, since they're still in the Pac-12 and everything except Oregon's looked pretty terrible.
That division will come down to Oregon and Stanford.
I like how we're still giving Stanford all the credit, even though they are.
It's not even giving Stanford the credit. It's just that no one else, you know, Washington State's not very good. Washington showed they weren't very good. Oregon State's breaking in new quarterback, new coach. You know, Cal should be better because they're a year older, but, you know, I don't know how much you can really expect. You know, Jared Goff's going to throw the ball all over the field, but are they going to have enough on defense to stop somebody?
All right, well, one last team I'd like to talk about while we're on the Pac-12, Utah. They won, which was expected, but I'm not sure how y'all feel about that win, because really it came down to a pick six right near the end of the game, and that was the deciding factor. Both teams, Utah and Michigan, showed similar stats. Really the key difference was the turnover battle. So is Utah looking at a positive season upcoming, you think?
I like to see them against different competition. It's way too early to tell. They got turnovers from a QB who really didn't turn the ball over that much, and I don't know if it's, you know, and we're talking about this time last year, he didn't turn the ball over that much, but, you know, we'll see, you know, is it the offense? Is he still adjusting? I mean, he has a lot of young receivers. That was definitely mentioned heavily on the telecast. But, you know, if he doesn't turn the ball over, you know, maybe we're talking about, you know, Michigan getting their first win and Harbaugh's, you know, debut. So we'll see. I'm not ready to say. I think Michigan underplayed, and I think Utah into their skill level. So we'll see when they get into a little bit harder competition with Utah.
It's tough as a defense to make your living turning the ball over. You know, you can teach it and stress it, you know, getting takeaways, getting the ball to a point. But a lot of that's, you know, putting the other team's offense in situations where they're going to make mistakes. And, you know, I'm looking at their schedule. They've got Oregon week four. So that'll kind of be the big, you know, assuming they don't stumble against Utah State or Fresno, that game at Autzen Stadium in Eugene will kind of be, all right, Utah, now's your chance to really show me what you bring to the table.
Okay. I guess we'll have to just see how that plays out. I think they've got a pretty positive outlook. But, yeah, as always, Oregon is that stumbling block in that division. That conference. Moving forward, we're going to get into the Big Ten. So I think Northwestern, I think, is one of those teams where no one's really sure what to make of them. They always view them very negatively. But after a week like this where they – took down Stanford pretty convincingly, they kind of become this sexy pick, if you will, in a Big Ten that is not very impressive in a lot of other areas. You got any? So, what really impresses you about Northwestern?
You know, I mean, Fitzgerald's always, you know, he's a Northwestern guy. He played there. He kind of took over a tough situation. And, you know, he's put together a good team. You know, they've got a young quarterback who played well in his first game, who kind of stepped up against what's normally a pretty good Stanford defense. You know, and when you can hold Stanford to, you know, what do they have on the ground? Less than 100 yards on the ground? You know, I mean, that's definitely always something you can talk about. And the other thing is they're sitting in the West, where Wisconsin came out and didn't really show you anything. Nebraska came out and got beat. You know, Minnesota played really well against TCU. The question is Minnesota real or not? You know, and then you've got the other kind of bottom feeder. So I think it sets up really well for Northwestern. A lot of it, I don't know who they get from the East. You know, if they avoid Ohio State or Michigan State, then I think they've definitely got a chance at winning the West.
I would agree. You know, from watching the game, I think they're a little lucky. You know, Hogan was just blatantly sailing the ball and missing some throws that he was making at the end of last year. But, you know, it's up to him to make those plays, right? So we can't fault them for the QB missing on throws that he usually makes. That's, I mean, they don't get to decide that. So, you know, they played really good run defense. They, you know, got some turnovers. They had a linebacker, I think he's a sophomore this year, can't remember the guy's name for the life of me. I feel so bad because he...
It was number 18. I can't remember his name, but the guy played a hell of a game.
Yeah, I mean, he was everywhere, and he should have had two interceptions, including the fumbles and the tackles he was making. I mean, he was everywhere. You know, he might be the difference maker for them this year in terms of just being the leader of that defense from the middle linebacker spot and just constantly making plays. So I will buy Northwestern for right now.
For the moment, until they start losing again. Okay, well, moving on to another program, which we've got a lot of questions about. Penn State, I think, was the big surprise this weekend, losing to Temple, and in incredibly convincing fashion. I think it's fair to say that no one saw that coming, except maybe a few Temple fans. But I guess when you look at that game, where do you put the fault on? When I look at the stats, I see a quarterback who barely made 100 passing yards, threw one interception, had a QBR of 3.2. Is that the person that you put the blame on, or was it the defense? Who's to fault for this game?
I'm going to put it on that Penn State offensive line who gave up 10 sacks. 10.
I don't know.
Back 10 times.
I put it on two. I have
do
to.
Do you want to say? Do you want to say that again, real fast? How many sacks
James
was
Franklin?
It?
Obviously, is not putting his quarterback in a position to win, and it's partly on the quarterback to get in the right protection. Correct. But in the same note, do you know which team actually gave the marker for a loss this weekend? It was Temple. Temple may have gotten 10 sacks on Christian Hattenberg, but they also gave up 14 tackles for loss against Penn State. So, I mean, he obviously is coaching up the defense. I think, you know, the defense can only hold so long when you're talking about, you know, constantly being out on the field and the offense is not getting anywhere. But then the offensive line, I mean, someone has to be a turnstile. There was a two-man sack given up against Temple. We should all be ashamed for them.
Wow. Okay. They got the win, man. Come on.
Two-man sack. That's all I'm gonna say.
All right. So moving on. What do we make of Minnesota in that TCU game? Because I think everyone, except Nigel, of course, because Nigel, I don't really know how you make your picks. Thought that TCU was gonna win that game, but Minnesota did keep it close. I think with a very good defensive performance. If Minnesota's going forward, what do they need to improve on to become a challenger in that dangerous Western division with, you know, Northwestern and Nebraska and all those other terrifying teams?
I think the fact that you saw that Tundra Tebow and Mitch Leidner threw the ball as well as he did, I think that's definitely going to help. You know, Minnesota's been known kind of in that same Wisconsin vein as a lineup, hit the mouth and run the ball team. So to see Leitner make that well of an adjustment to throwing the ball, especially having lost his favorite target, Max Williams, you know, I think that bodes really well for Minnesota. But like I said, the winner of the West is all going to depend on who they play in the East.
Yeah, we're going to have to get those schedules together. By the way, quote Tundra, would you say Tundra Tebow?
Tundra Tebow.
I love it. You know, I think Minnesota can make some noise. To be frank, I think the reason they lost that game more on TCU just has way more talent than them. But, I mean, they were in it. They were in it, and I called it, and it didn't happen. But, you know, give them a little bit more talent on their side of the ball, and I think they could have, you know, actually done something. So, you know, Minnesota, we will see. I think that division, that side of the division, like Andrew said, will be more decided by the other division and who plays who, but.
Okay, so moving on from the Golden Gophers, I think everybody saw Wisconsin on ESPN, playing Alabama, so we got what we expected out of that game. Alabama ended up winning. But my question is on the offensive side for Wisconsin. We're you're looking at 40 yards rushing against Alabama. Now, is that more because Alabama's defense is just that solid? Or is that on Wisconsin coming up with a new scheme after the loss of their star running back last year?
I think a lot of that's on just Alabama being that good on defense. I mean, Saban's always been a guy who's been fantastic at coming out and saying, look, this is what you want to do. I'm not going to let you do that. You're going to have to do something else. You know, it's kind of, you know, he's in that Bill Belichick vein, who Belichick does the same thing. You know, the big talk is when the Patriots beat the Rams that first time, Belichick with five defensive backs shut down the pass, and the Rams refused to try to run the ball. I think it's the same thing with Wisconsin. They wanted to run the ball. Chris Clement, you know, everyone talks about Melvin Gordon. Clement had just under 1,000 yards last year behind Melvin Gordon. You know, Wisconsin's not going to ever really get too passive because they don't usually have the weapons. The wide receivers aren't there. The tight ends are usually pretty talented. I mean, Joel Stavi's not a guy who's going to beat anyone with his arm. Plus, he had issues with the yips last year where he just completely forgot how to throw the ball. So, I mean, like I said, I think the biggest part of that is the Alabama defense coming out and saying, you want to run the ball, we're going to keep you from doing that.
I mean, I agree. You know, Clement said at the end of the game, you know, in the post-game comments that, you know, he had hurt himself and wasn't 100%. But to me, that's the onus on the coaching staff. If the guy isn't 100%, you need to put in someone else. You know, that I don't feel sorry for you. It's kind of like the Pacquiao thing. You can't come out after you've lost and say, this, and this, and I just went with what I had. And I'm like, okay, that sucks. Injuries happen, you know. You know, Wisconsin lost, you know, I think one of their leaders on defense first two or three plays of the game. And, you know, I would have loved to have seen him in the game action, but, I mean, that's what happens in football. Injuries happen. You know, if the running back behind Clement can't get the job done and his 80 or 90% is better than his, the guy behind is 100%, then you still went with your best option.
All right. Well, the last thing I'd like to touch on in the Big Ten would be Nebraska and their surprising loss to BYU. I guess I wouldn't really say it was surprising. It was exciting watching it, but to me, those Hail Mary plays are just something that, you know, at the end of the day, you could coach it better, you can play it better, but a lot of the times it just comes down to luck how those things play out. But now that Nebraska's seen that first loss, I feel like their head coach has got to worry about waking up in the middle of the night and see the AD standing over him with a knife or something. So how do we feel this affects Nebraska's head coach going into the next few games?
First, I want to talk BYU. You've got to feel bad for Taysom Hill. He's lost another year to injury. That's two in a row. You know, the kid keeps fighting back, and it's just not in the cards, it seems like. And then the three receivers BYU sent down for that Hail Mary were 6'5", 6'5", 6'6". So they've got guys. BYU's a great team. I think they're going to win a lot of games this year. Win Nebraska, you know, you got to kind of see. I don't know what their schedule is. Again, they're in the West, so Wisconsin, Northwestern, Minnesota are really their hard fights there. You know, I don't know who they pick up on the East crossovers, but, you know, Nebraska for the second time has fired a coach that had 9 wins. And we all saw what happened when they went from Frank Solich to Bill Callahan. So, you know, it's got to be a tough, you know, because if he doesn't win 9 wins, you just got to sit back and say, all right, well, why'd you fire the guy that won 9?
I mean, looking at their schedule, I mean, South Alabama's next. That's obviously a win. They're at Miami. That depends on how Miami looks, really. They look really good, you know. But, you know, that could be a loss. Southern Mississippi, that's a win. Illinois, you know, that's a win. They got to play Wisconsin, you know, Minnesota, Northwestern, who we've been hyping up. Got to play Michigan State. They say Rutgers is a win. Maybe, you know, definitely a win. You know, they might not get to a bowl game this year. That's a real possibility looking at their schedule.
they miss a bowl game, all hell break loose in Lane 10.
Yeah, we'll see.
Personally, I'd like to see all hell break loose in Lincoln because they just burned the corn stalks to the ground. That'd be terrible. shortage of corn, height of popcorn sales. All right, moving on to the Big 12, which has 10 teams. It still confuses the crap out of me. So, Texas, I'm just going to put it plainly. Texas is pretty much useless. I don't know what the heck you would expect to see out of them now. Granted, they were going up against Notre Dame, which probably a pretty good team on defense and offense. But you got to be disappointed with QB and Tyron Swoops, who's getting held to less than 100 yards passing. Got a QBR 7.6. And their rushing game was just atrocious with 60 yards. Their defense was, you know, was terrible, to put it plainly. What? Should we just put Texas in the trash bin this year? What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think they're a young team. You know, I mean, obviously Swoops is, I believe, a true sophomore. You know, Notre Dame's a quality team. They've got a lot of talent on offense, and they're probably one of the better defensive teams in the country. So, you know, you kind of expected the game to be a little one-sided. But for Swoops to play that poorly, you know, either you're not – putting him in a position to at least, you know, be able to make short throws, be able to kind of build his confidence up through the early part of the game. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, you want to have faith in Charlie Strong. He did really, really well at Louisville, built that program back. You know, he's a great guy. He's an upstanding coach. You know, no nonsense, clean program. But, you know, what matters in the end is winning and losing games. And he's having a lot of trouble winning them.
Swoops is a junior, by the way.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah, that's when you would expect people to be on the uptake. I agree. Notre Dame is going to be is a good defense. Not going to be. They are a good defense. You know, I mean, everything looked bad for Texas. Everything. All right, I'm actually going to mention them here later in another segment, but I mean, Texas. You know, I felt bad for Charles Strong when he got hired, just because, you know, the reception he got was god awful. But he's not going to help his case here in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, so looking at the other teams. The two teams, I guess, that we would expect to be coming out of this conference, possibly into the playoffs, we saw a TCU win against Minnesota, which I think a lot of people would see as being disappointing, just because of how close it was. But a win is a win. And it, like Nigel keeps pointing out, Minnesota is a good program. And we saw a Baylor win where they struggled in the first half but ended up breaking away in the second half. Against, I guess, a lack of depth on the SMU team overall, which of those victories do you think was more impressive, coming out of this first week?
I think the TCU win is. I mean, they went on a road, they beat a very good Minnesota team. I think Minnesota is another team, like we've been talking about, it's going to be in competition to win the West. You know, and you know, you go on the road, you go to a place like that, it's going to help you. And I mean, Baylor, you know, giving up that much to SMU, it was a brand new head coach at SMU. It was a home game. You know, they were jazzed up. They were ready to play. You know, plus, you know, that Baylor defense has had so much off-season issues with the Okwawi or whatever his name was, you know, and all of that. It's, and I mean, Chad Morris is a great offensive coordinator. He's a great offensive mind, and he's had a whole off-season to put together a plan.
You know, Baylor was probably definitely looking past SMU. I agree that the TCU win is going to look good here in a couple of months when they're evaluating themselves. Baylor has not gotten the message. They do not schedule quality opponents. Now, SMU may be quality in a couple of years, but obviously this year they're still trying to learn, get themselves in the mix. But Baylor just has not gotten the message. And for people who are going to say, well, you know, they couldn't schedule a game this late, guaranteed there are plenty of teams who would love to get Baylor on the schedule if given the opportunity. I've seen schools cancel games with less notice than this. Baylor needs to get the message.
All right, and the last team I'd like to bring up in the Big 12 would be another program that's proving that coping with alcoholism and depression should be a major, or if not a class, in college, and that would be Kansas. I really don't know what to say. I guess we weren't expecting losses out of two top five conference programs so early in the season. But if it was going to be two, it would be Washington State and Kansas. What do you guys think about the situation?
I mean, the Jayhawks right now, not only are they – I mean, they're playing with, I believe, 60 scholarship players. They actually have less scholarship players than FCS teams have. Like, I believe I was reading that South Dakota State actually had more players on scholarship than Kansas did. So, you know, that complete and utter lack of depth is going to create issues. And, you know, the guy they brought in, Beatty, he was an OC at Kansas under Mangino when they were good and they won games. You know, then you've got the program down in Manhattan where Snyder's made a living off of junior college kids and bringing those guys in play. I don't know. I mean, Kansas has always been a place that's just never really been, you know, they're a basketball school. Everyone knows that. I mean, obviously one of the top basketball programs in the history of the game. You know, Kansas is a state that doesn't produce almost any Division I football talent. They've got to recruit heavy into Texas, which everyone already does. You know, Kansas, to me, would be one of those programs where if they went to what Georgia Tech did on offense, I think it would definitely give them some advantages.
Can I have one thought here? I think, looking at their schedule, they're going to either have to get a win on September the 12th, which is against Memphis, or November the 7th. The Texas-Kansas game might be the most putrid thing we'll ever see.
Fun thoughts. A rivalry for the future, Texas versus Kansas. Okay, so, of course, moving on to our favorite conference. We're going to talk about the SEC now. So, Bama... Really, we knew they did what we expected them to do. They dominated in the running game. My question becomes, though, was anything really decided with the quarterback competition? Because I think a lot of people were impressed with Coker, but Bateman coming in at the last second didn't really do anything wrong. They both kind of showed the same numbers. Granted, Bateman played for a lot less time. Do you think there might still be a quarterback competition at Alabama?
The biggest part of all of this to me is Jacob Coker has had two off seasons with which to come in and outright win the job. And he hasn't done enough in Nick Saban or Lane Kiffin's eyes to outright win the job. That just shows me either Coker's just not going to be the guy, and he may play great, you know, against Wisconsin. I don't know much about the Wisconsin defense, but I mean, the guy's had chances. Coker's had every chance in the world to outright win the job, and he hasn't done it.
I mean, we know what the MO is this year in Alabama with QB system. If you don't fuck up, we'll keep you in the game. Coker, if he doesn't fuck up, we'll stay in the game. They've seen at least enough. They're basically like, you know, it's you're innocent till proven guilty kind of approach. So if Bateman's going to get in the game, it's because Coker's thrown 2 to 3 interceptions in the first quarter, and they're like, okay, we got to get him out of there.
To clarify, yeah. I think that's Alabama's MO every year. You know, as an Alabama fan, I think it's fair to say. Going on, Texas A&M came in. I wouldn't say they dominated, but it sure looked bad against Arizona State. What do you think of the new defensive coordinator coming in there, setting things up?
I think Chavis has come in and been able to kind of do at A&M what Mike London hasn't been able to do at Virginia. You know, A&M's recruited fantastically the past couple of years, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and Chavis looks like he's been able to come in, tailor a scheme to those guys and their strengths, and get the best out of them. Because, you know, you can recruit great till the cows come home, but you you can't do anything on the field, none of it matters. And Chavis seems to be a guy that's come in and been able to have the kind of results you'd expect on the field given the recruiting classes they brought in.
We'll see. I don't want to mispronounce the Arizona State's QB's name that badly, so I won't say it, but
Berkovici?
I want to say DJ guy's name instead. But, you know, he just, what was with him for the first, I guess, half of the game? He did not want to throw the ball more than 3 yards down the field. It would be easy to play defense if a guy isn't throwing it deep at all. I mean, was that the game plan? I don't remember Arizona State being just kind of a dink and dunk kind of offense last year. So I think that played into their hands. Let's see when they actually face a QB who wants to actually get it past, you know, the first down marker maybe every once in a while. But we'll see. We have to be careful about week one overreactions in anything that we do. So this is definitely one of them, because Texas A&M last year were world beaters, and no, I'm not going to get suckered in 2 years in a row.
Kenny Trill, September Heisman.
I believe. All the way. All right. So the last thing I'd like to touch on in the West is Auburn. I'm sure Auburn fans would love to tell you how great that win was against Louisville and how wrong we were. But I'm looking at the stats, and I'm pretty sure that Louisville actually showed better on every side of the ball there. They outgained them on offense. They stopped them on defense. They got three interceptions to, I think, Louisville's one, if I remember correctly. So how much of this is coming down to Auburn's skill versus just flat out being lucky at the end of the day?
I mean, they had the lead and then kind of let their foot off to let Louisville back in, but Johnson looked awful. All of his interceptions were just bad. His first interception, he did not even see the defensive back and just clean threw it to him in the chest.
Yeah. it was bad. I would hate to say, I mean, Louisville, definitely that, I mean, that freshman, that kid scares me. If he actually can get some work on his mechanics and understand the game. I mean, they use Michael Vick as a comparison one of the announcers. And the sad thing is, I think that was spot on. Like, some people would be like, oh, that's gross overreaction. I'm like, he was running all over the field. There was a 4th and 7 that we knew he was going to get the ball. Auburn knew he was going to get the ball. And he still got a first down. I mean, I think Auburn got lucky. And that's definitely going to undermine them here in the next couple of weeks. I can't remember who it is. I think they don't play LSU next. I think it's Mississippi State. But Auburn's going to have to face some real teams here very soon, obviously being in the SEC. But, they're going to be undermined here very soon, very, very soon, because their defense scored 14 points for them, basically. One was a direct fumble return for a touchdown. Another was – basically a give me interception return, and they had to go, throw it to, Duke there in the red zone. So, but we'll see. We'll see. Their offense definitely did not look pretty outside of the running backs. Running backs did well. Barber did pretty well today.
I certainly hope you're right. I don't need another one of these years where everybody's talking up Auburn as the team of destiny just because they seem to pull it out every game like FSU did last year. Anyway, last thing I'd like to touch on the SEC. So Vandy was the only team that lost, and I think that's expected. If a team was going to lose, it was going to be Vandy. But, Vandy fans. Oh, God, the horror. But the East just didn't look good to me at all. Am I imagining things? With the general lack of defense and how close all the games were, y'all have any thoughts on the matter?
The best looking defensive team was South Carolina, and they just couldn't do they could do absolutely nothing on the offensive side of the ball. Georgia won big like they were expected to. Tennessee fought with a pretty good Bowling Green team, which, I mean, Tennessee's still young. You know, everyone wants to anoint them, but they've still got a lot of young guys on that team. Vanderbilt's a dumpster fire. You know, Kentucky's kind of fallen into that same thing with UVA. Stoops recruits great, but he just didn't get the results on the field yet.
Yeah. We call it Vandy versus Western Kentucky. So I'm not surprised. We actually called that. We knew that Western Kentucky wasn't going to be completely stopping off. And Vandy had an offense to speak of. And, you know, yeah, I mean, it's really going to come down to, I guess, Georgia versus Tennessee, you know, in the end. Because I just don't think South Carolina, I mean, even, you know, the old ball coach had to say, we got lucky on that one. And they did. You know, North Carolina should have beaten them, but it should have, could have, would have, but didn't.
All right. Moving on to the ACC, we saw UVA, who struggled, to say the least, against a very solid UCLA team. But looking at their schedule over the next four games, they've got Notre Dame lined up. Well, let's just say they've got a very rough schedule ahead of them. Why do they like torturing themselves like this?
Well, I mean, the Notre Dame game is conference mandated because Notre Dame has to play five ACC teams every year as a part of their conference contract, and it cycles through the teams. So, you know, same reason Tech picked them up, Clemson picked them up, and all that. The Boise State game, I guess, you know, it's probably Boise looking to play a Power Five team. Yeah. You know, Virginia too. You know, Mike London can recruit, but either he or his coordinators don't seem to be able to get the results on the field, given some of the talent they brought in. You know, Quinn Blanding's a great safety, Smoke is a running back, but, you know, they just don't seem to be able to do a lot with what they've been able to bring in.
I mean, I can definitely agree with that. They obviously are the anti-Baylor in that they actually schedule hard games. You know, I felt like they were conflicted with themselves. I understand that they wanted to be dedicated to the run. Like, they obviously stressed that we got away from the run last year, and we think that hurt us. But they were so committed to the run, and, you know, their quarterback was actually hitting on, you know, 60% of his passes. I just didn't understand why, even when they got behind, yeah, you don't go to full pass, you know, because you obviously want to keep them honest, but they were not playing like they were from behind. They should have, obviously, they kicked three field goals in the first half. That right there was their undoing. I don't remember how many times they threw on first down, but if they threw more on first down, I think that would have definitely helped them.
Well, since we were talking about those obligated games for Notre Dame, I guess I'm going to go ahead and just count Notre Dame in the ACC because I don't want to spend a whole section talking about independence with BYU and Notre Dame. Anyway, Notre Dame, we saw a great game out of their new quarterback, Zaire. Now, again, granted, that was against a Texas team that did absolutely nothing. They might as well have been a dead log out there. But is it fair to say at this point that Zaire is a better quarterback or at least as talented a quarterback as Everett Golson?
I don't want to really anoint them until they play somebody who can do something on defense. I mean, we've obviously seen Texas is just an absolute mess. You know, they'll play UVA next week, which you don't even know what, you know, you expect UVA to not really be much of a game. They get Georgia Tech the third week, which the Tech defense looked improved, but it was also Alcorn State, so you really don't have a litmus test there. But yeah, I mean, Zaire looked extremely talented. Notre Dame's big question is it running back? With Tarion Fulston out for the remainder of the year, having already lost Greg Bryant to suspension, you know, they're going to be really, really young at running back.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's definitely going to be interesting to them. Like Andrew stated, I mean, just looking at their schedule, I don't see any team on their schedule in the first 6 to 7 games that I'm just like, yeah, they have good defense. Notre Dame could go undefeated this year, looking at their schedule. It's very possible. I can see why everybody's talking about them in the playoff hunt, because they could honestly go undefeated if everything comes together for them.
Oh, definitely.
All right. So getting back to teams that are actually in the ACC, we got Louisville, who, as we talked about earlier, performed very well but made some critical mistakes, especially near the end of the game with a certain timeout call that I think we're going to touch on shortly. But we also had UNC, who, for the life of me, I don't understand why they didn't run Elijah Wood more. Is this the major problem that we see in the ACC and why they're so bipolar, these poor coaching decisions? Or is this more? Are there more to that in the ACC that I just don't understand?
The bigger question to me is you watch and you look at both of Marquise Williams' end zone interceptions, they were in the exact same formation, they ran the exact same route combination, and the exact same defender in South Carolina intercepted the ball. They went 3-by-1, three ran a corner, two ran a shallow crosser. Williams tried to throw the shallow crosser and did not see the linebacker twice. Exact same formation, exact same route combination, exact same outcome. You know, and he should run the ball. You know, and that's the thing a lot of times with coaches, you'll see him, is for some reason they get away from, all right, well, this is work, this is the work, this is work, and they kind of outsmart themselves.
No, definitely. We talked about that at length. I mean, just because it's a game Thursday, I think, you know, between me and Drew and Logan and some other, you know, people that we talked to, I mean, for your running back to have a 10-yard, you know, average per carry, and you to just be like, well, we're going to feed him 13 times, and then we're just going to throw the ball because that's what our offense does, and I just did not get it. And I'm trying to see if I chalk it up to, like Andrew said, he outsmarted himself. Or was it just stubbornness? Like, this is my offense. I'm going to run my offense. And there's a time and a place for that. You know, people get so latched on to, this is my offense, this is my offense, instead of being like, you know, they get the box score at the halftime. You know, they understand what's working, what's not working, just by looking at the box score, by looking at the game. You know, if they had stuck to the run, especially in the end zone after that first interception in the end zone, I think we'd be talking about UNC getting a quality win against the SEC.
All right, and then the last thing for the ACC, kind of a little, just a little fun note. So John Walford over at Wake Forest won his first game with a very impressive going 20 for 27, 323 yards passing, three touchdowns, had a 95.5 QBR. That's pretty ridiculous. And, you know, he's looking at going 4-0 into his first major game, which would be FSU, assuming he can beat Army, Indiana, and Syracuse. So should we be expecting big things from this quarterback, even though he's going to Wake Forest, which is a program where, you know, no offense to Wake Forest fans out there, I think we all know that traditionally we view Wake as being probably one of the weaker teams in the conference, if not just the weakest team in the conference.
Who did they beat?
Elon.
Yeah, Elon's not very good. They'll beat Army. Army's just, it's an academy, but it's a hard academy on top of that. I mean, it's one that they have more issues recruiting than Navy or Air Force do for a lot of reasons, and we could probably spend half an hour talking about that. Indiana, I mean, Indiana was your SEC East champions last year, having beaten Missouri. So you've got to think, and they were not a bad team early in the year before the quarterback started going down. I think when they had to thrust that young kid in at quarterback, that just kind of foobarred them completely, and Tevin Coleman had to carry everything. Syracuse, I don't know a lot about. I know they've got Terrell Hunt coming back off of an injury. But yeah, I could see Wake winning all three of those games and being undefeated going into the Florida State game. I think that coach they brought in has done, you know, Dave Clawson is in a place that's a little different. You have to recruit different. You know, Jim Grobe made a living out of redshirting guys. He redshirted and developed and put together some solid teams. But yeah, I mean, I could see him being 4-0 going into Florida State.
Yeah. No, Hunt is actually out of the year with an Achilles tear. So
again, wow.
Yeah, yeah, he won't be back. You know, Walford, and I think the reason I made the prediction that it'll be 4-0, he was a freshman last year, right? And a lot of his offensive linemen knew are first-time starters. And, you know, unlike Penn State, you know, the offensive line has made enough progress to actually give him time and protection. And he's kind of athletic. I mean, he had 60 yards rush in the game on 7 carries. His longest, obviously, being for 70 yards, so probably got sacked a few times in there. But, you know, I think he will have enough time to actually make some progressions, make some throws. You know, he will obviously be the whole offense for that team. He led them in rushing and in passing, obviously. But I think Wake Forest will make it to a bowl game this year. Obviously, if they go 4-0, their first game, all they have to do is go 2-6 in the subsequent games. You know, they're not going to obviously beat Louisville, they're not going to beat Florida, and they're not going to beat, you know, Clemson. But, you know, all they have to do is go 2-3 the rest of their competition.
They're going to do what Arkansas did. They're going to win all 4 of their non-conference games and then go 2-6 in the conference.
Yeah, I think that's doable for them. I really do.
All right, guys. Well, with that, we're going to wrap up the week one recap for the SEC Haters podcast. Really quick, I'd like to give a shout out to Kennesaw State University, who still the only undefeated team in the FCS that I'm aware of. Going forward, we are clearly trying a new format this week. So if you're interested, if you have any comments, if you like it, if you dislike it, feel free to give us a contact at nosecplease@gmail.com. Again, send that email to nosecplease@gmail.com. Any closing thoughts from you guys?
Like you said, shout out to Brian Bohannon and the Kennesaw State Owls. Great win for the program. Great start. Just as a heads up, Georgia State, they did it the right way.
Oh, can't pick on them too much, but yeah.
All right, guys. With that is Logan and Augusta signing off.